Blog Talk Radio.
Brought up all the coconut, he bought it for the diamond sister, had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up and said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you called the doctor, woke him up. Said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, to relieve his belly ache. I said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor.
Friends, to where the music never ends. We're so glad for all your minds that we find, that we find. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Late Night Poets Rhythm and Rhyme Show. We are part of the world's largest community at thoughtpoetry.com, and there you can find us, the Late Night Poets. We put these radio shows on 7 nights a week, Monday through Sunday, 10 p.m. to midnight. Come hang with our wild dove, Luyu and Nature and Passion on Mondays. Dig into the Twisted Thoughts and Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. Turn up the heat with the Art of Seduction on Wednesday. Thursdays are split between In Our Craft or Selling Art with Richard and Neutron and Double Helix with Aphasiana and Dex. Friday, come fill my eyes with open poetry. And every other Saturday, join Gray Eyes howling at the moon in the Canadian wild as he brings you bad company. And if you're looking for a little more edgy realm, then check out our After Midnight shows, 12:30 to 2:30 a.m., Monday through Saturday morning. join Victoria tonight as she brings you Hearts of L&B. Tuesday, take a walk on the wild side. Wednesday, join Neutron and Cap as they have the Midnight Promise. Thursday, the split between delving into a world of strange magic with Incoherent Dust and Black Lace Diaries with Mistress Victoria Frost and Mr. M. Friday's a split between Crawling Into Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babylon as they teach you the fine art of part sinner, part saint. Check out the contest and prompts for all of our shows. Call in to read your poems and hang for the fun. Good evening, Pam. How are you doing?
Well, I am just doing awesome sauce and a side order of fries. How are you doing?
You got the lime in your coconut, don't you?
Well, I have vodka in my ginger beer, if that counts.
That's a lime.
And how are you doing, Rex?
Fine. I was just checking out a new song from somebody we haven't heard from in quite a long time. Tears for Fears put out a new song 3 days ago, Tipping Point.
Really?
Absolutely. Oh. New album comes out February 25th next year.
Oh, that is so cool. Yeah, I haven't. Yeah, they haven't been heard from in a while, have they?
Nope, not since that. What was that? The Breakfast Club was their big mainstay, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, they had a song,
Everybody
Breakfast
Wants
Club.
To Change the World.
Yep. And were they the ones who sung Don't You Forget About Me, or was that somebody else?
Let me see. I think that was,
that might have been somebody else. That was such a good
song.
Now
I'm bothered by the thought, and I can't remember who that is. Simple Minds. They were also in that movie, too. So, yeah.
Yes.
You hit on the same spot.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's an awesome movie soundtrack. And speaking of music, I mean, great prompts, awesome intro song. Just, you know, one of those kind of intro songs that has you dancing right away.
Well, unfortunately, could have used all of them. I mean, Dr. Love by Kiss and Dr. Feel Good by Motley Crue. They could have worked too, but I had to go with Nielsen.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It was a great choice. I mean, they all would have been great choices, but that one, you know what? The intro song sets the tone for the show, and that song just says fun, till your daddy takes the T-Bird away.
Well, yeah, that's a little off topic.
Hey, you only have 14 freaking rights. I can be off topic for a little bit.
It was a hard-pressed topic. I thought it would be all right, but
right. Yeah, you know what? But the rights we got are awesome. We didn't get a huge amount of rights, but the ones we got are definitely awesome. And, you know, it's going to be great fun to comment on them, although I do think we have some serious ones, too, in which case then it'll just be, you know, thought-provoking and intriguing to be able to delve into people's hearts, so, and all that good stuff. So, you know. Now, The guy who wrote and sang Lime and the Coconut, did he ever do any other songs, or was he like one of those one-hit wonder guys?
No, he did some other stuff, but that was the biggest one of his, the one that everybody remembers, Lime and the Coconut. I mean, what was it? Coconut came out in 71. He had a Jump Into the Fire. Moonbeam song without her, Daddy's song, All I Think About Is You, Cuddly Toy. But like I said, Coconut is the one everybody remembers.
Yep, yep. And that is so true. Yeah, definitely a good lineup. I like that you found a Doors song.
It's just like War. If you think of War, you think of one song. Eric Burdon and War, Still That Wine. That kind of sticks with you.
Yes, yes. So yeah, it's basically that whole idea of when you have that one song that makes you think of a singer or a group, but they've done more, but they didn't do anything that really stood out quite as much. It just goes to show you that if you get a catchy hook line, everything else will be forgotten, you know. And, maybe not forgotten, but not as easily remembered. Now I have I'm Too Sexy for My Shirt by Right Fred Said. Right Said Fred going through my head.
Could be elevator music.
It could be. Which would be explained by the fact that I am, I'm not in an elevator.
That was one of the reasons Jimmy Page got out of doing studio work. Everything started revolving into the elevator realm. He didn't like the direction. So he moved into the Yardbirds at that point after their second call to him. You know, come join us.
That is so true. And grocery stores play music over the loudspeaker, you know, and I'll walk into our local grocery store and I'll hear music I used to listen to it as, a kid or a young teenager. So always something playing somewhere.
With him, he saw what was going on. He had free reign in the studio. They'd tell him, hey, you know what, you're going to sit in with this one. The solo is all yours. And he had free reign. And he played into the lines that that they gave him and gave him a little bit more oomph for their songs.
Jimmy Page?
Yep.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I could totally see that. Yeah, man. He's extremely talented, and I could definitely see that happening. But and tonight's lineup, you had some talented music ranging from what, the 60s to the 90s.
Yeah, well, we had we had Kiss in there from 70s and the 80s, going out. We had Motley Crue, one of the hair bands back in the day. John Mayall comes in from the 60s with the Blues Breakers. What else we got? Van Halen from 79 through the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Well, Nilsson, that was 71, so what else did we have?
Definitely a nice variety. Kiss was a really cool band. Oh. Now, they came...
Humble Pie was in the late 60s, early 70s, where Peter Frampton came out of Humble Pie.
Who came out of Humble Pie?
Peter Frampton.
Oh, okay. Man, there's another talented one. Yeah.
Absolutely. Black Sabbath was 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. Robert Palmer, 80s.
I remember watching Robert Palmer on MTV.
Well, that Steve Miller song was from 69. That was way back in the days before he hit Fly Like an Eagle in the mid-70s.
Right, when he became a little more well-known. Yeah. And Yeah, definitely. Definitely a great lineup of song choices. And, you know, it's definitely a good night to play doctor.
Yeah, although a lot of them run along a single course of lines.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, well, like Dr. Feelgood, obviously, you know, about a drug dealer, you know. So they definitely, they're actually, even though they all have the word doctor in it, they're not necessarily all about, you know, doctors per se. So, like you said, definitely a nice variety. All right, shall we go ahead and delve into our first write?
Absolutely.
All right. Up first, we have Curac, After Twilight by Michael McDermott. And go ahead and give that a read, Rex.
This is a rollover from last week. Michael didn't get the permission in time, but he did grant it. So we're going to kick off the night with this one. Kerouac After Midnight by Michael McDermott. After Twilight. Around that corner, city lights show an alternative way, sipping sour whiskey from spent chip cups in low sweat cellars where frothy cats play, shades under tilted black bead beret hat, and Charlie's drums spout out this steady rap. Night is stumps iodine in the doorway queue, waiting for a tired bird wings to flap. On stage, another rhythmic rant from Jack. Sets shapely dark stalking table legs to pass. Smoke haze from unfiltered thin street rolls as cool closed eyes dig that lonely whale horn blow. All youth and zen style sharing mind jazz and blues. And I'm thinking, we gotta go make our own home, babe. But I always want to be anywhere with you. End poem. All right, Ian, what do you think?
That was a great read. Man, this would have fit well with your After Midnight show, too. I mean, both shows, this is just really cool. The imagery all the way through just has that kind of laid-back, jazzy beat poet feel to it that I really appreciate. I like City Lights Show in Alternative Way, sipping sour whiskey from spent chipped cups and low seat cellars where frothy cats play. You know, that really just kind of makes you think of that whole underground music scene or those clubs that, you know, like not a lot of people know about, or those secret poker games, you know, jazz clubs, those kind of things. I really like waiting for a tired bird's wings to flap on stage, another rant from Jack. So that obviously must have been something to do with listening to beat poetry if it mentions Jack, so that makes sense. And such shapely dark stock and table legs to tap, smoke haze from unfiltered thin street rolls. I like that because it adds kind of a touch of sensuality to it. We got to go make our own poems, babe, because I always want to go to anywhere with you. I like how this the last line makes the poem very personal, as if it's a moment between two people, and yet, because you have Jack Kerouac poetry being read, or Jack Kerouac himself reading the poetry, you have the jazz music, you have the smoke-filled room, you know there's other people around there, but within those last two lines, after all that imagery, after all the sound and everything that's going on, it pulls into the whole idea of let's go write poetry by ourselves. You know, so which I think really works really well, and just absolutely an awesome write that really creates a great atmosphere and is very well done.
nicely said. I do like the scenery in this. After twilight around the corner, city lights show an alternative way, sipping style whiskey from spent chip cups in low sweat cellars by Coffee Cat Play. There's that nice tone of the old the coffee joints in New York City, the late 50s, early 60s, where you'd find Kerouac or Ginsberg. Even Bob Dylan performed in some of those very same coffee houses in the very, very early days before he actually hit it. So the Frothy Cats was a nice touch that hits on that note to coffee shop. And also the black beet beret hats. Everybody's got to be a cool cat wearing their berets because that's the style, a little French influence. The curt little cat leaning on the head, so to speak. Again, a line, waiting for a tired bird's wings to flap. On stage, another rhythmic rant from Jack. That shapely, dark-stalking table legs to tap. I like that that line. It's a two-fold thought. The thought to black-stalking women, but also the table legs themselves offering up. Everybody's in a good mood. Banging on the tables, and the tables are kind of rocking and rolling into the beat itself because everything is hitting on those right notes to warm the mind and body. And all you Zen style sharing mind jazz and blues, that hits the very same beat and flavor of the piece itself. And it walks that kind of a long lost realm of where things were once heralded, those little unique places. They no longer exist. They've gone by the wayside, and you can't find them anymore, which is a shame. They're sort of like CBGBs and OBI off in New York and other stuff. I mean, Whiskey A Go-Go. Those were the places you went to find this and other music of that era that you all went to listen to them. Roll into and have some fun with. On the back end of this, the last two lines, we've got to go make our own poems, babe, because I always want to anywhere with you. Like that note to the flavor of the piece itself, walking into, hey, you can do this at home.
I like that. I like how you brought up the duality of the table legs, like the idea of the table legs thumping, because everybody else is just having such a good time and stomping their feet, and you know, and now who is Snyder? I googled Snyder, and the only thing I could find was a movie director back from the 1960s. There's a Snyder Pretzel. What's that?
Snyder Pretzel?
Yeah, there's a brand of pretzels called Snyder's.
Yeah, I know. The pretzels ain't working in this one. The Snyder might be the reference to your movie. You forget, this was also the time of, what's his name, Andy Warhol as well. Walked that very same realm within these angles. The Snyder might be the reference to your movie guys in the 60s. I don't know offhand.
It could be. The only thing I just did a quick reading. The one thing he was most famous for is his directing debut was the Living Dead. It was one of those 1960s like zombie movies. So I don't know. You might have mentioned this, but I'm not sure. Where it says waiting for a tired bird's wings to flap. Is that a reference to clapping or guitar playing? Do you think?
Where was that one again?
It's I think it was right in the center. I gotta stop pacing. Yeah, Snyder slumps iodine in the doorway queue, waiting for a tired bird's wings to flap.
Well, that's. Well, the bird hits the reference of girl, but it also this might be someone coming in for a landing because they're tired and they just want to chill in the moment.
I like that. I like that. Cool. Yeah. Well, I definitely dig the vibe of this poem. Ah, right.
I like it.
Me too. Me too. Got a, like I said, good vibe to it. All right. And up next we have Sexy Nurses by Betty Page. And it goes like this. All dolled up in lace, silky satin lingerie, chewing bubble gum, fiery brunettes, bring champagne bottles to bed, nurse you back to health, sipping on codeine, maybe a few Xanax pills, get you all relaxed, pleasurably seductive, so alluring, deviously wild, innocently sweet, piercing you with fine morphine, mesmerized, divine. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I think Betty went a little in deep with the angle play on this one.
I think so. I think
I know she went with the Eagles, but she plays up a little more of a doctor, a nurse feel good with this one.
Right.
Okay. Let's see. Now, that opening stanza, all dolled up in lace, silky satin lingerie, chewing bubblegum. Boy, does that seem like role-playing night. Champagne bottles to bed, nurse you back to health. Sipping on codeine, maybe a few Xanax, if you'll... Oh, she dug into the Dr. Feelgood mojo. Innocently sweet, piercing you with fine morphine, mesmerized, divine. All right, Betty, you're letting your hair hang down on this one.
I have to agree with you. Yep, I have to agree with you, Rex. She is definitely letting her hair hang down. And this whole thing has a role-playing feel to it, but definitely, as you said, that first stanza. And, shoot, you know, and morphine, that stuff knocks you for a loop. I remember one time I went to the hospital and they gave me morphine because I cracked my head open on the roof of a van that went rolling down a hill. And I thought I had to, like, I made some comment about being there for only like an hour and how everything got done really quickly. And they were like, no, you've been here like 10 hours. And I was like, oh, okay. So she really has got some good references, like to the codeine and the Xanax. I like the playfulness of fiery brunettes bring champagne bottles to bed, nurse you back to health. It's always what I love about Betty's writing is how she can kind of put in things that are dark and things that are playful in the same poem and have it balance out. And this is definitely one of those smile-inducing poems because you can just tell, you know, how much fun she had writing it. So definitely a very cool write.
Yeah, she's going to lull you into a dream world, tie you to the bedpost and half her way with you.
And I'm sure there are many, many people smiling at that idea right now. And you're going to wake up and think it's only been an hour of being tied to the bed when it's been eight.
No, you're gonna wake up in the morning and the hotel maid comes into the room and you're all done up like Sherlock Holmes in that movie, naked except with a pillow, and says, the key to your release is under this pillow.
Oh, my gosh. Right? Oh, my gosh, yes. I could totally picture that. I actually never saw that movie. That must have been a funny part.
Yeah, and you got arrested for that.
Oh my gosh. And but yeah, this was definitely this could easily be a scene in a movie or something somebody could get arrested for.
Oh, that could be, let me see, right out of Pulp Fiction.
Oh, that's one of my all-time favorite movies. You know, and the great thing about that movie is that, you know, it was just such an awesome cast and the twists and turns and just, you know, so many memorable lines. But
yeah,
are you talking
I think
about
one or two of those characters were second thought. So a couple of those roles were second thought.
Oh, you mean like they weren't supposed to be the people who originally played them?
Let me see.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
John Travolta, maybe? Because he wasn't really doing much back then. That was like basically like a comeback role for him.
Yeah, but I don't think he was originally cast in that. And Samuel L. Jackson was basically new on the scene, but that kind of made him. And he got that role cast thanks to a mistake the casting crew made.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I don't know about that movie. I do know that the girl who played Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz was not actually supposed to be the original choice. Yeah, and did you know Samuel L. Jackson actually has a wallet? Oh, wait, I can't say this on an early show. Never mind. Okay, wait, I'll abbreviate. Samuel L. Jackson actually has a wallet that says bad MF-er.
Of course he does. All right, what we got
next? All right. Up next, I have, not sure if she was a witch, but she damn well doctored me, by Eric Svensson. And we have an audio for that, so here we go.
Not sure if she was a witch, but she darn well doctored me. Befuddled, muddled, maybe jinxed. Met this dame many moons ago. Student years when CCR saw a bad moon rising. Made her acquaintance between religious study and drama classes. Rhodes University was a remote bastion of purist study, landlocked and far away from any curvaceous ocean waves. On the John, Masefield often interjected with an urge. Purge to go down to the sea again, escape on a tall ship and a star to steer by. Man, oh man, this dame was a star. No young freshman student she was. Wham, bam, immediate click, raven black haired chick, purple nails. Eyes that arrested all men instantly. Still see how she inhales a cigarette. Of course, she smoked. Close my eyes and her scent swamps. Wish I could remember her name, Ryuma, for this dame had done it all, seen it all, poet here was moth to candle flame attracted. Hitchhiking through Europe was a darn big for this farm boy. She arrived in Paris with suitcase and electric curlers. City of romance soon revealed its underbelly. Still your Madame Butterfly's humming chorus play petit mort moment. How she described dumping her electric curlers in a trash bin. So how did you survive? A girl's got to do what a girl's got to do, doll. Of course, anything but call daddy to wire money over. A torrid, tango-ish love affair with a mercenary. Anguish, angst, and existential crisis. Poet was all hush, puppy, big ears. Such intensity. She called men boys, mocked their toys. I like to play with these little cockerels. Initially enrolled for religious studies, Dame in Flame changed my mind. Swift change to drama department. Befuddled, muddled, maybe jinx. Warren Zephyr, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Her best song ever. Come with me, doll. Where to? There's a cell group that drives our demons. Hush, puppy ears pricked up. You joking? They've invited me. They say they've been praying for me. Befuddled, maybe jinxed, muddled. Why did I suddenly pity the little cockerels that extended the invitation? When? Where? Midnight, in the basement of the psych building. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. That was much appreciated. As well as the story. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got?
All right, well, I have to say, oh my goodness, that was certainly a fun write. Oh, by the way, did you see my Betty Page nurse that I put in Late Night Poets?
I ain't got there yet. Betty
okay,
Page.
Well, when you get a chance. Yep, it's Betty Page as a nurse. And anyway, so this is so much fun. And I love the general vibe of it, of how it's about those college days of an innocent farm boy, you know, who moves from the country to somewhere new. And he gets introduced to this woman who teaches him about a new way of life, a new way of thinking. And, you know, and that the title itself is just so clever. Not sure if she was a witch, but she darn well doctored me. I like there's, as always, he's got wonderful references. Like the student years when CCR saw a bad moon rising made her acquaintance between religious study and drama classes. And I thought that was, I even thought that, you know, throwing in the religious studies and drama classes was great. Also, I really like still hear Madame Butterfly humming chorus play petit mort moment, how she described dumping her electric curlers in a trash bin. You know, there's just kind of this, it's got little tidbits of darkness, but it's so fun. And again, where he mentions a torrid, tangoish love affair with a mercenary, anguish, angst, existential crises. Poet was all hush, puppy, big ears, such intensity. She called men boys, mocked their toys. I'd like to play with these little cockerels. I have to say, that is just one of the funniest lines, some of the funniest lines in this whole poem. Just absolutely smile-inducing stories. I like how he brings into us, you know, this is another one that would make a great movie. It's that whole idea you know, of the farm boy and the goth girl coming together. And, you know, it just, those whole kind of opposites attract, even if it's only for a brief moment in life. And I like how he uses befuddled, muddled, maybe jinxed. Why did I find pity the little cockles that extended the invitation? I also like how he put the whoa before when, as if to represent the stuttering. You know, there's just such a feeling of that nervous energy that comes with the first time of being with a woman who demands, who knows exactly what she wants. You know, it's just all the way through a very clever write and very well done.
Oh, the befuddled, muddled, maybe jinxed. That I like that interjection and the drop in here and there to still throw that in. It gives me that sort of a Hocus Pocus, the movie. Well, offers up all three of those, befuddled, muddled, and maybe jinxed. Now, the next stanza down, met this day many moons ago, dropping in CCR, bad mood rising. Made her acquaintance between religious study and drama class was a nice roll in, but also that third stanza in the middle, hits on the curvaceous ocean waves, and then on the John Mayfield, often interjected with an urge to go down to the sea again, escape in a tall ship, and a star steer by John Mayfield, where you hit the double angle there, on the John, so you're reading poetry in the bathroom, so to speak. But John Mayfield was a poet laureate in England from, 1930 to 1967, until his death, right around there. And one of his poems was about the sea. And it was always, the thought was to always explore that which in life is open to you, because it's like it is the view of God, so to speak, to enjoying life as it is presented, as opposed to just drifting. And let's see what else we got here. The next section down, the wham, bam, immediate click, raven head, black chick, purple nails, eyes that arrested all men instantly, still see how she inhales a cigarette. It all kind of hits that 1970s notice thought. But you don't really think of seeing someone that entrenched in the dark angle way back then, but it fits too. The Tara Tango-ish love affair. I love the back end where this the humor gets interjected quite well. The little cockerels, he drops on that twice, and that there's a nice play on both the men boys, their toys, and just having a little angle to play off of. Oh yeah, I just play little cockerel. Nothing to me, just something to keep my mind busy in the moment. And that thought with Warren Zevon, I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, her best song ever. Clever there. That was a nice interjection as well. But the bottom end where he hits on that thought, oh, come on, there's this cell group that drives out demons. Yeah. And then it's the in the basement of the psych building. Yeah. There's a bit of fun going to be happening there. So she's already messing with the boys and their toys, and that rolls into the psych department. So,
right.
I think it was a great finish.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. He did have a lot of great references. I totally would not have gotten that reference to the witch movie because, well, I only watched it once years ago, and it never got into it that much, as much as other people do. But Rex, guess who has on his Speedo and has climbed into the hot tub with us?
Jeremy. I have the idea.
Well, it's Jeremy.
You know when the temperature's right, I'm going to come cannonballing, Rex. Wow. Hey guys, how
that
you doing?
Be a big hot
tub. Hey, glad you could join us.
Yep, happy to be here.
How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm doing great.
Oh, did you get to hear that one by chance?
No, I'm sorry. I hooked up a little bit late, so we're gonna have to move on to the next one.
That's cool. I just thought I'd ask. All right, Pam, what are we up to now?
All right. Up next, we have Dr. Frankenstein by Brother Jacob. And we're going to put Jeremy to work right away. So,
look at that.
Dr.
Picture.
Frankenstein, Brother Jacob. Here we go. Hey, there, Igor, pass me Mad Hatter's brain. We need this monster to go insane. Last time he had a broken wire. That big old baby was scared of fire. Screw those bolts in tightly tight and send him out this Halloween night. I want to make them people scream. They won't be waking from this dream. I'm the one they call Dr. Frankenstein. I'm the one who makes the monsters fine. I'm the one they call Dr. Frankenstein. My monster will send goosebumps down your spine. I'm the one they call Dr. Frankenstein. It's my monster's time to shine. And boom.
Great read, Jeremy. Thank you very much. I like that. A little bit of fun. All right, Pam, what you got?
This one was great fun. I love the picture from the Young Frankenstein movie. This has wonderful rhyme and flow. It takes a darker song about somebody who sells drugs on the street and turns it into something fun and humorous. And, you know, it really made me laugh out loud. I really like how he sets our taste buds up for Halloween in the future. And this is great all the way through, but I especially liked in that first stanza, the last two lines, where it says, last time he had a broken wire, that big old baby was scared of fire. And I'm the one they call Dr. Frankenstein, my monster will send goosebumps down your spine. And then I like that couplet where it says, that it's my monster's time to shine. And then that phrase, time to shine, works really well on a dual level, like the whole idea, like sending the bolts of electricity and lightning through the monster. But at the same time, because it refers to the movie Young Frankenstein, it has that idea of shining in the spotlight. So I definitely think this is a very cool write.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Jeremy, you got to read. How about you?
I like how the narrative voice of the Dr. Frankenstein is almost, there's the obvious self-deprecation. It's the very end where he's saying, it's my monster's time to shine. But also in some subtle movements that he makes in the language, he kind of downplays him being the mad genius, and it's more all about the monster. In particularly in the second, where he says, I want to make them people scream. Instead of saying something more grammatically correct, I mean, he's kind of downplaying the whole image of the Dr. Frankenstein, and it's all put on the monster, which is kind of cool, I thought.
Oh, absolutely. I thought this was a nice little synopsis of Young Frankenstein. Hey there, Igor, pass me Mad Hatter's brain. And you see there, Igor, whose brain did you get? Abby. Abby who? Abby Normal. We need this monster to go insane. They broke it down to a little nice touches of humor to roll into, which was, I thought that was tight. The tidy tight, well, that kind of hits on that thought, was that the monster and Madeline Kahn in the cave scene. Is it true what they say about you monsters? Oh, it's true. It's true. And then she has a hissy fit. Oh, seven quickies, and you're off to meet another one with the boys. Having a little bit of fun with it. And what else we got here? What was that one? I'm the one who makes the monsters fly, and I'm the one that calls. He plays on the nice touch with the song itself, Dr. Feelgood, with Dr. Frankenstein. I like that thought. The Goosebumps angle, a little reference to the books as well, which was also good. And I did like that that broken reference you mentioned, Jeremy. I want to make them people scream. They won't be waking from this dream. There's kind of a Nightmare on Elm Street thought in that line as well. So, and the monster's time to shine to finish with kind of hits on that moment of when he's he brings him out on the stage and they're doing the song Putting on the Ritz. That was a great scene. I know, that movie is wonderful. I mean, you talk about a mad genius, Mel Brooks was it. All right, Pam, what you got next?
Yeah, and I have to say that the guy who played young Frankenstein, he was just as funny as all get up. And so we've established that Jeremy Theodore.
And you couldn't call him Frankenstein. It was Dr. Frankenstein until later in the movie when he admits to himself, yes, I'm a Frankenstein.
Right, but I've never heard anybody, right, but the movie's called Young Frankenstein, right? Isn't it?
Yep.
So I'm wearing a swimsuit from the 1890s. Robbie and Jeremy are both wearing Speedos. Are you part of the Speedo Club, Rex?
Part of the what?
The Speedo. Robbie says it's a Speedo Club, that all the men have to wear Speedos.
We're in the poetry hot tub here, Rex.
I've never done Speedos. They're too confining. They're like the underground. You need the Met. You gotta have some ballroom.
Oh, too funny. All right. Up next we have Dr. Chill by Bush Baby. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Dr. Chill by Bush Baby. Will you stop your stressing? He's just messing with your girl. Just a pawn in his sick game. Never the queen, you're too tame. Let me give you a dose of my chill pill. Little Mary Poppin', pop that pill. A spoonful of sugar and let's get real. Little Mary Poppin', pop that pill. Follow my words, you know they heal. I told you too often, just numb what you feel. Let my medicine go down your pretty throat while I get busy downtown. That's why you keep this doctor around. Never understood why? You let him make you ill? Let me give you a dose of my chill pill. Little Mary Poppins, pop that pill. A spoonful of sugar and let's get real. Pop me, pretty girl, under your thumb. End poem. Now that was some parallel laughs. Nice. Thank you very much, Bush Baby. All right, Jeremy, you get first on this one.
Yeah. yeah. Dr. Chill. It's very provocative. I think you can take definitely the seductive feel of all of this. Not only is some kind of pusher that's trying to get someone to alter their reality with some kind of narcotic, but also I think there's some definite innuendo that goes along with this, and I think that fits very well with what we have in the prompt down below. I like the repetition. I think the driving force, especially when you're trying to encourage somebody to do something, I feel that narrative voice or that persuasive voice comes back again and again and again to a correct degree, to an apropos amount of repetition that really gets that slithery snake of enticement that makes you just want to get in and go ahead and take that chill pill. So I really enjoyed it, Bush Baby. I thought it was a great poem.
Nice. Excellent. Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Pam, what you got for Bush Baby?
I really like this. I have to agree with Jeremy that the repetition works really well in it. And I love the reference to Little Mary Poppins. I thought that was really cool. What was interesting to me is this worked really well to fit the whole kind of tone of a drug dealer, but I also think it kind of worked well on the whole idea of personifying the pill itself, because it starts out with the first stanza really comes across as someone who wants to help this woman. Will you stop your stressing? He's just messing with you, girl. This opponent is a game. Never the queen. You're too tame. Let me give you a dose of my chill pill. And, you know, then, I love, and another great Mary Poppins reference was, let my medicine go down your pretty throat, which also had kind of a nice raw sensuality to it. And the personification and also these a spoonful of sugar and let's get real, pop me pretty girl under your tongue. I really felt, you know, it was a great innuendo, but also worked for the whole idea of the pill itself, you know, talking to the girl and saying, hey, this is what you want. So I really thought this was a cool write all the way through and very well done.
It is, because the reference is I'm your doctor by the Doors, and the way she laid it out here, I did like the double thought with Little Mary Poppins, pop that pill. You hear that there is a kind of double notion, Little Mary Poppins being the Miss Goody Two Shoes. Pop that pill is the pill, so to speak, the original pill for women from the early 70s. The one that stops you from getting pregnant. And that's the idea. And then, you guys hit on that thought of the repetition with Little Mary Poppins, pop that pill, which is perfect. Swallow my words, you know they heal. I told you often, just know what you feel. Let my medicine go down your pretty throat while I get busy downtown. That's why you keep this doctor around. The idea, hey, maybe she's a little on the youthful angle, and the fact is, if you don't want to get pregnant, you got to take Dr. Chill's pill so you don't have to worry about the other angle. And then again, a spoonful of sugar hits on that Mary Poppins idea again, and still hits on let's get real, pop me pretty girl under your tongue. That kind of hits on a second thought. Under your tongue, there's a notion to acid. Just drop that little pill under your tongue and let it do its work. All right. Where you want to go next?
All right. Awesome comment there, Rex. And up next we have There Ain't No Pill by Martha Gettle. And we have a recording for that one, so here we go.
There Ain't No Pill by Martha Gettle. I went to a doctor just the other day. I said, doctor, doctor, can you make the pain go away? I said, doctor, will you help me, please? He said, I'm sorry, there's no cure for your disease. There is a pill for most of everything. Love is something a cure no pill can bring. No matter what doctor I may visit, it is true, I'm never gonna find a cure for loving you. Doctor, doctor, this love, it keeps on getting me down. Just like a Mary that keeps on going around. Doctor, doctor, there ain't no pill that I will ever find that's gonna ever get him off my mind. There ain't no pill gonna cure my ill. No force to push me on up that hill. These feelings, they just go on and on. So I know you'll soon be gone. Doctor, doctor, this love, it keeps on getting me down. Just like a Mary that keeps on going around. Doctor, doctor, there ain't no pill that I will ever find that's gonna ever get him off my mind. So I will keep on loving you, it's true. No matter what you put me through, in this world of cures for most of it all, a pill can't fix you when you take love's fall.
Thank you very much, Martha. Your SoundCloud is greatly appreciated. And Pam, you're up. And that picture, damn, that's the depressing
what?
Picture. The picture is depressing.
What picture? Oh,
Martha's
that
picture.
That is a
depressing
picture.
She looks dejected, and he's being honest. I ain't got nothing for you. Sorry.
You know what he's saying? He's saying, it won't do any good if I make your boobs bigger. Your husband's still going to cheat with younger women. And she's saying, damn.
Wow.
But I really...
Talk about it right in the face.
You know, I really enjoy Martha's SoundCloud and how much she gets into them and how much fun she has, and her ability writing catchy tunes even about sad subjects. And great chorus here, Dr. D, or Doctor, this love is keeps on getting me down, just like a Mary that keeps on going around. Ain't no pill that I ever find that's ever going to get him off my mind. A great play, I would assume, on the Robert Palmer song. And but instead of like singing to the doctor, you know, I love you, it's the whole idea of, you know, I can't get this guy off my mind. So I thought that was just a really great take and a little twist on the whole idea. And, you know, I like how she brings in the whole idea that there's a pill for almost everything. There isn't a pill that can fix you if you end up falling in love with the wrong person. So excellent song and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with what Pam said and the fact that I love that Martha takes the time to put this to music and gives us a whole different perspective on it. I think I've even made this comment before with her poetry, and that the content is much darker than the way her country music or even folk song-y tune that she puts to it makes it feel. So I like that there's almost a brighter side to something that feels much darker. I mean, even what Rex said with the picture of something that can be a very serious interaction, the way she puts it is kind of, it's that aw shucks, again, folk music, country music, whatever genre you want to put in, where they sing about something that's very dark, but then they still make a melody out of it that you want to tap your foot to. The line in the chorus that kind of made me turn up a smile, again, despite of the dark subject matter, is just like a Mary that keeps on going round. I like that little play. And the fact that she repeated it a couple of times, it brought a smile through this whole ordeal that this poor gal is going through. But yeah, Martha, I mean, I enjoy every time she sings it. And better believe Pam is saying thanks that you're submitting these SoundClouds, because I would be begging her to sing them if Martha wasn't doing it. So it's always much enjoyed.
I like what you said there, Jeremy. You're right. It does. The picture offers up the dark, but self kind of walks a lighter note, even though it hits on a darker subject. Because you hit that first close where she hits on, oh, he said, I'm sorry, there's no cure for your disease. That does set a nice tone for the piece itself, but it walks out as something humorous, despite the fact that it is a sad role. But you know what? If you don't take the humor when offered at the end of things or later on down the line, then you're going to repeat the same thought going forward. And I, too, like that thought with the, just like a merry that keeps on going round, there's a nice playful tune to that. The merry-go-round itself is like a, the spinning wheel from Blood, Sweat, and Tears. It just keeps revolving around its own thoughts. And a pill can't fix when you take love's fall. What a finishing note there. And it's true. You know what? There might be pills for everything else, but there ain't no cures for a broken heart. All right, Pam, we're coming back to you.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. And I'm actually going to go ahead and put my poem up next, which I will warn you is adult, though not so adult that it can't be read. So, yeah.
Well, it's a good thing Phil's in bed.
Right? Oh, I would read this in front of Phil. You know, so I never write anything up for earlier shows that I wouldn't read in front of Phil. And this is Put the Lime in the Coconut Across.
Says the one who put the rules. Says the one who actually had the rules made so you couldn't do that again.
Hey, the rules didn't happen until... okay, yeah. I know. Oh, my gosh.
Never mind. I don't want to take your man. I just want to him.
Right? Yeah. So, well, what happened, Jeremy, is when back when Late Night Poets first started, like 6 years ago, before when I had just joined All Poetry, before I had become a host, we had a sensual show and we had no rules set up. So, and I was an extremely shy person. Like, I had written one sensual poem that involved nothing but kissing, and then I decided to let my real self out of the bag. And I got on the show, and I said in this quiet little voice, well, this is kind of explicit. And I read it, and obviously I have to skip some words, but there was a line in it that said, oh, you want to know how I can make love to your man? Oh, honey, I didn't make love to your man. I asked your man. And when I got done reading it,
oh no.
the whole room was silent. And not long after that, we had to start establishing rules.
Wow.
So I've learned to behave myself. I've also learned the use of metaphors and illusion. But with all that being said, this is Put the Lime in the Coconut. And it goes like this. Playing doctor, sugary sips of vodka and ginger ale under anesthetic highs of your lime-squeezed kisses, tracing the rock salt rim and gulping down the juice. Tornado heartbeats heated in live wire emotions. Honeyed sips and cayenne caresses cure all. Entwined eroticism empties electric energies. Lost in the lemon peel loop of loving you, introspecting the prospect of a hot beef injection, melting mysticism into buttered rum moments, encouraged enjoyment of every shivered encore, indulging in imagery of irresistible influences, night moves and high heels leaving burgundy lip stains, taste testing the tropical watered pleasures. How about we raise each other's blood pressure, enraptured by the cure of coming down together, creative coursing through parchment cravings, oh my god, exotic nocturne, caramel charms glazed with fevered flames, overindulging in the slow seduction of flight, nursing the deep purple of every nightly nibble. Under this dress, I want to wear your messy grin. Tomorrow, doctor, we can play and pray again. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And it's a good thing you went to metaphors and allusions because you haven't gone very far from the original take on that show so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jeremy, what you think?
Oh, man.
I know.
I very much dig it. I very much dig it. And the song, let's talk about the prompt, the song I'm putting the lime in the coconut. It's kind of a the song is much is very light in what it does, and it's sing-along. But it also, there's also the chorus or the overlapping feeling of it. How do I describe it? The fact that there's, am I saying it right lyrically? When they sing this song, there's a lot of overlapping chorus harmonies with it. Harmony is the word I'm looking for.
Yes.
And what I noticed in this is you, there is so much charge in this poem, Pam, and you don't let up on it. But the fact that you don't punctuate it either, I felt it overlapping. I felt the heat of each line playing on what we're building on. But it wasn't a natural progression. It was like a harmony. I don't know how else to put it. And the fact that it was an acrostic, and I knew that it was spelling something down, and so I knew that there was a plotting and there was a reason for each themed line, I felt that there was a harmony to it, if any of that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Along with all of that, I think you were awesome, and I've noticed this more and more as I become more and more familiar with your rights in your use of poetic device. I love the alliteration. I love the internal rhyme. I love the assonance. I love any time that a poet takes the extra effort to make all of that work. So I felt that in this, despite the distraction of the sensual charged subject matter that you definitely delicately danced along the razor's edge of it all. I enjoyed it. Great poem, Pam.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about dancing around the edges there. I like that. Nicely done, Jeremy. And you're right. There is way too much. Like I said, it's a good thing you went to metaphors and allusions. You haven't gone too far off track. Yeah, hot beef injection.
I still have the same mind.
That might have gone better if you'd gone, instead of buttered rum, buttered bum.
Ooh. I like that. Or buttered buns.
Yeah, buttered buns. B-U-M-S.
I like that.
Well, it just kind of fits the motif since you already threw in the hot beef injection. You might as well have hot buttered bum.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, God.
All right.
Well,
I'll go ahead and get the next poem up. And up next, we have Dr. D by Rain474.
I think Bobby's enjoying himself on the other side.
I think he is. It's good to see him enjoying himself. All right. So up next, we have Dr. D by Rain474. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly, certainly. Dr. D, Rain, 474. Ooh, 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 ooh. The town hall is gloomy, gloomy. As you sit down lonely, lonely. As you fought with your hubby, who got so angry, angry. Oh, baby, baby. It isn't that goody, goody. Life without hubby, hubby. Oh, baby, baby. We are so naggy, naggy. Making things swaggy, swaggy. Oh, baby, baby. Come to me, come to me. You're Dr. D, Dr. D. Oh, baby, baby. Come to me, come to me. I know you, baby. You aren't happy. As the days aren't so very lonely. The way it used to be in the days early. And your breaths are falling alarmingly as your thoughts are sinking dangerously over the row of both indulged recently. Oh, baby, come to me, for you need me, to set me free and set you free right under this tree with a kiss of me and kiss of me. Oh, baby, come to me, for you're longing for me ever since I left thee, oh baby, I'm the Dr. D, you have to see, you have to see, I am your Dr. D. You have seen, been looking since I flee, your Dr. D, Dr. D, you love so free, so very free, oh come baby, oh my only, and I know this fully, oh baby, love me, I need thee, and you need me. So why do we fight, oh baby, baby? Listen to your Dr. D, who's calling, you see? Make him feel free. Your Dr. D, Dr. D, wants love so free, so free. Oh, my baby, baby, don't be silly-dilly. Listen to me, oh, deadly. You come to me, oh, Lily, come to me, come to me. I'm your Dr. D, Dr. D. You love me so freely, freely. Oh, baby, baby, I need thee. Your Dr. D, Dr. D, come to me. Oh, baby, baby, my Lily, Lily, come to me, come to me. Your Dr. D, Dr. D. La, 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 Dr. D, Dr. D. Me, you, you and me, so free and free. Your Dr. D, Dr. D. La, 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 Dr. D, Dr. D. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, my absolute favorite part was listening to Jeremy go, ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now that was actually a really, it was a great read. And this is such a fun write. I don't know, I'm having a lot of fun tonight, even with the ones that are on a more serious subject. Like, you know, here we got a woman who's all gloomy and angry and heartbroken, and this guy's like, oh, yeah, come to me, baby. And you know, there's this kind of serious undertone in the whole thought of, you know, someone being sad and someone using that moment to get in their pants. But the way this has the repetition to it, it reminds me of those kind of groups, like where you have the main singer and then you have the doo-wop singers in the background echoing or doing something. It really just had a really like snappy, jazzy, repetitive feel to it. You know, so I like how he threw in words like silly dilly and la la la, and you know, just had all this kind of this musical feel to it. I know you, baby, you aren't happy as the days aren't so very lovely the way it used to be in days early, and your breaths are falling alarmingly as your thoughts are sinking dangerously over the low you both indulged recently. I've been watching, like, episodes of House, like, overindulging in episodes of House lately, and that line where it says that your breaths are falling alarmingly makes me think about how every single episode somebody has either a heart attack or can't breathe and has to have the tube put down their throat. You know, this is just absolutely a clever write, great references, great musicality to it, and very well done.
Wow, thank you very much, ma'am. It took me a minute to catch on where this was going because that first stanza kind of set itself up. Then getting into the second, getting down into, oh, baby, baby, come to me, your Dr. D. Then I got the drift of where it was going. And I hit that notation of the song working in the background of my mind. So this played out very well. I like that hit on those thoughts of, and your breaths are falling alarmingly as your thoughts are sinking dangerously over the row you both indulged recently. It kind of hits on the notation of that which had come and set them apart. And now the thought is trying to work themselves back in together with that sort of Dr. D running through the whole thing, which I thought was a nice run. How about you, Jeremy? You got to read it. Oh, you're going to get Pam up in her arms again.
Yeah, right. It was, I'm sitting here reading it out loud, and I'm waiting for my wife to come barging through the door asking me who the hell I'm talking to on the phone with all of the sensuality that's in this poem. I mean, I think it's almost deceptive on how it is, because it comes across subtly, but I'm there definitely is a lot of sexually charged innuendos throughout the entire piece. And I like what you guys touched on with the echo. I think Pam called it as an echo on the parentheses after each line. This poem kind of breathes. There's almost like the echo gives it an added pace, and it gives it how do I say this? It definitely is the art of love making is how I felt the whole poem. And I felt that the pace to it and that echo kind of it kind of intensified or almost even it was showing or I'm having a hard time with my words, but it definitely was trying to emulate what was going on in the act is how I felt this poem was doing it. And I thought it was very sensual, and I liked the technique of that echo. I thought it was very successful in accentuating all of the sultry feel and the message that was in the poem. So I do understand that it was a song rain, and I'm sorry that I didn't sing it, but I think it was very well composed otherwise.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Pam. What ooing are you into now?
All right. Up next, we have Doctor by Peter Solway and Rex. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Doctor by Peter Solway. Script for which specialist, heart or lung or gonad swollen? Old fella happy to pull my shots down. Most fun since end of lockdown. Discos in Sweden to attend. Ingest methamphetamines. Impress virgins. No time to waste between appointments. Breast of nibbles erect. Reasons for living. Blood pressure to go up. An amorous god to come down. Suggest a rerun. More children born. But fools of overpopulation. Poetry not sufficient. Textile scanning, Pacific drifting by the Isles of Death, where I cook, dark club, and poem. All right, Pam, what'd you think?
What I think is, I think that Peter makes me seem like an impressed virgin, I get those two words mixed up. I really think he's always got intriguing lines. Like, you can guarantee that if somebody's going to take a prompt in a different direction, it's going to be Peter Solway. I like the ingest methamphetamines. Impress virgins, no time to waste between appointments. I also like the reference to discos in Sweden to attend. It makes me think of this guy that was trying to get me and a friend of mine to dance with him, except for he didn't speak English, so all he kept doing was saying discotheque over and over again in a really heavy accent. To me, there's this, whole idea of how doctors put themselves on we put doctors, and maybe some even put themselves on, a god-like pedestal. Pacific drifting by the Isles of Death, where Cook got clubbed. I thought made for a great dual reference, and the idea of going to the clubs, but also kind of the idea of like clubbing a seal, like putting, I felt like it had a reference to, what is that when doctors kill a patient because a patient wants to die? what's the word for that?
Euthanasia?
No, it's like a doctor-assisted suicide, but there's a specific name for it.
Euthanasia?
Yeah, that's it, Jeremy, euthanasia. That's what I was thinking of. It made me think that, like, got clubbed has a reference to the clubbing mentioned in the discos in Sweden, but also seemed to me almost be a reference to the idea of euthanasia and how doctors have that power over life and death. So I have really just a thought-provoking write all the way through, and very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Pam. Jeremy, how about you?
Well, thanks for nothing, Pam. I mean, there goes my best pickup line where I would go to bars and go, discotheque. It used to work every time, Pam, but now I feel like the jig is up. I really enjoyed this. It's pent-up frustration, the whole thing. I mean, the gonads swollen, and it speaks to the time of all of us. I feel it was a very real modern-day snapshot on what we're all feeling on the fact of dealing with all of this pandemic and everything. We're all pent up, and you turn to things like the methamphetamines. You try to find some kind of joy, but it feels like everything is kind of on pause for right now. I really was intrigued by the last stanza. I didn't know what the reference was. If either of you know what that is, the Isles of Death.
Yeah.
Either of you know what that reference is? Is it literature, or can you expand on that? Go ahead.
Yeah, Captain Cook sailed the South Seas back in late 18th century. One of his last voyages down there, he was on the Pacific Islands, and I think it was somewhere around Hawaii. His crew took a wood, it was supposed to be sacred or something, from the local villages, and he died on that island, Captain Cook himself. So that Pacific drifting by the Isles of Death, where Cook got clubbed, kind of gives you a reference to Cook dying on that island himself. But it also kind of hits on the notion of Cook as the one who cooks up the pills, methamphetamine or any other drug, or even a prescription drug. There is a cook, one who produces. They're called cooks because they're brewers. They're the manufacturers who put everything in and then get it all down to a pressed pill form, so to speak, or a happy shot, so to speak.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I like that. I like how that comes back around. Very cool.
It was. This was. It does hit on both angles. The doctors for being those who can produce, and also for the ones who actually produce the back end of things, which also like that that one stanza with the breasts. There's a nice pop up for the blue pill there. But you know what? Some things, maybe best leave things alone because you don't know what the end result is. Because you leave it up too long, there ain't no blood in the brain. You end up like
Well, and it almost seems like there's a disdain for all of this too, the fact that, of all of it, because in that 1, 2, 3, 4, and the fifth, an amorous god to come down to suggest a rerun, more children born. It that didn't come across to me as a positive. I mean, it seemed like there was a disdain. There's no indication really, but the placement of that, it seemed like there was a disdain for the fact that the love, the act of love making or all of this produces more offspring. And I don't know why I came back with that feeling from that stanza. But yeah, I mean, again, it felt there was the pent up. I don't know. The whole thing just felt pent up to me, and the fact that you wouldn't like the result is another re-emphasis on that thought.
Oh yeah, because that next line down, but fools of low population, kind of runs right into the same angle of that amorous god. Yeah,
right.
A little bit too much of a fornicatory behavior going on, and it has no real value in the moment other than production.
Yep, Exactly.
Great thoughts there, Jeremy. Thank you. All right, Pam, where you want to go next? Pam? Oh.
I think she snuck away.
You sound very quiet and confused. What's going on?
We just finished the conversation. When run it back to you, and we find out, oh, you're not even here. Okay.
I was not, but I'm back, and I have the next poem up, The Cure, by Longfellow Serenade. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
Sure. The Cure by Longfellow Serenade. I know you have a broken heart. Each time you cry, I feel it. But baby, you are in good hands. I know that I can heal it. You'll never weep for love again. My medicine's your cure. I'll wipe away the tears and pain as our love will endure. Girl, I will be your doctor. I've got your treatment plan. I'll fix that broken heart of yours. Don't worry, I'm your man. And you'll forget the pangs you feel of lovers from your past. Come to these arms and you will heal. This love is gonna last. End poem. And he took Kisses, Dr. Love as his poem. All right, Pam, since you took the runner and came back, you're up.
All right. Well, I like this. As always, he's got great rhyme and flow. This is one of those just wonderful, heartfelt writes. I like the whole idea of offering up to somebody a love that will last and being there for them because you know that other men have not been. You'll never weep for love again. My medicine's your cure. I'll wipe away the tears and pain as our love will endure. Wonderful lines there, beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, I look at it in two separate ways. First of all, I agree with what Pam just said. I thought that it was composed in a very well-metered way, and it was poetically extremely well composed. And I appreciated that because I felt that it flowed well, and it made the sentiment feel very sweet to me because of all the care that was put into it. Now, the dark side that I saw of this was the doctor is coming and offering the cure, and then it almost had a predatory nature to it. I don't feel like that was intended, and I apologize for even bringing it up if it wasn't a subject that was even considered when it was composed. But by being the doctor, there's an inherent trust to that, and the fact that the doctor is trying to seduce the patient seemed a little more predatory to me. So I hope that was intended, because if not, then I don't want it to be a slight in what Longfellow was trying to create. But I did enjoy it because I thought it was composed, again, like I said, in a very professional, well-mannered way.
Oh, that's a great comment. And you're right, there is that note to it, but it doesn't feel that way because of that last stanza itself. And you'll forget the pangs you feel of lovers from your past. Come to these arms and you will heal. This love is going to last. You run this, there's got to be that little bit of darkness because of that broken heart. So you've got to reflect that. And that last stanza offers up the note to that, which is the walkover from those first three stanzas, which are a little on the heart end of it, because the last stanza works as the cure. Nicely said there, Jeremy. I like that. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got?
First of all, I'd like to say welcome to the show, Chris. Glad you could join us.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Chris. How you doing, bro?
I'm awake. I'm here.
Excellent. Good to see you. Good to hear you.
And you all. Thank you.
All right. And since you got permission from the Duchess, we will go ahead and let you read your poem. All right. Your poem is up, Chris.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Dr. Robert. Classic album Revolver introduced us to this man. In 1966, Lennon and McCartney wrote him a song. Though listening to the lyrics, I'm guessing the inspiration came predominantly from John. 1966, pivotal year in the decade, drug culture really beginning to take hold. We started to study songs' lyrics more. She Gets High sang The Doors. But back to Dr. Robert. Great song, but who was it based on? There seemed to be three top of the list. The Robert Fraiman appears to be favourite, but very interesting. Bob or Robert Dylan also gets a mention. End poem.
Great read, Chris. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I like where you dug into this, and you're right. There's also another one. There's a Robert Fraser from London at that time who's big in cocaine and weed, and known as the doctor as well. But I do like the Dr. Fraiman reference because that hits on that Manhattan doctor who was the king of the town, offering up his famous vitamin B12 shots, which were pretty much loaded with methamphetamines at the time, just to get those high prices
apparently
going in the moment, which was cool.
Apparently Jackie Kennedy was one of his patients, wasn't he?
And the back end to this story, John threw a big monkey wrench into this too. He said this was about him because he was the guy that was carrying the pills across the continent as they toured.
I like it.
Thank you very much, Chris. Jeremy, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I really much enjoyed it because that's exactly right. I mean, that was such a cool time for both music and drugs because if you think about the music of the decades earlier, just the bubblegum lack of depth to what they were trying to mean, and there certainly wasn't any double meaning. And then when bands like the Beatles came to the scene and started adding some serious double entendre to everything they were doing, it really was eye-opening. And the fact that the drug culture is mixed into all of it makes it even more intriguing, the fact that we're still talking about it today. So, yeah, I can get into the fact that this is diving into the layers of the onion, and I really love how you ended it with Bob Dylan, one of the best lyricists of all time, even getting a message. So, yeah, it carries on, and it was an incredible time, and the fact that you put your thumb on the pulse the way you did was very enjoyable to listen to. Great poem.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.
Nice, Jeremy. And I forgot about that. Bob Dylan was the one in 64 who introduced the Beatles to pop in a hotel room in Manhattan. So
yeah, that's what I was reading.
All right, Pam, how about you?
I really enjoyed this. I always like how Chris makes great references to musicians and songs, and his your poetry always comes across like tributes. I've actually never heard this song before, at least not that I can remember, so I'll have to go and listen to it later. But what I like is that you mentioned the year 1966. 1966, pivotal year in the decade. You know, that whole stanza, how you know, drug culture really began to take hold. We start to say songs, lyrics more. She Gets High, sang The Doors. You know, the really great, the whole poem is awesome, but that's probably my favorite stanza in that it references the changes in culture that was happening. And I especially like how you mentioned that we start to study the lyrics more because there were a lot of songwriters in that time period, such as Dylan himself, who were also known as poets. So, you know, I thought this was a real clever write all the way through and very well done.
Thanks so much, Pam.
All right. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next we have back to the room. And up next, we have The Last in Line, McCartney's Words by Diane Dee. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
The Last Line in McCartney's Words by Diane Dee. The last line, the last line, it's where you want me to sign. No, no, I have to read the fine print and to have my agent read. I know that once my agent reads it, then he has me take the lead. Was that Lennon out the door? Sounds like he's stomping across the floor. And he's pouting in style, then acting like a grown-up child. The last line, I will take my time. The last line, oh, you want me to sign? No, I have to read the fine print that my agent has to read. No, 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 my agent says. No, Paul, you have to take the lead. What do you think that Alan will do, or do you think that his agent will sue? No, 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 let's not sign. You know we can't turn back the time. The last line, I will take my time. The last line, oh, you want me to sign. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. And Chris, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
I like how we got two Beatles poems in a row, basically. I did enjoy that. I'm obviously basing this on basically probably why the Beatles broke up, where Paul wanted a separate manager to who John, George and Ringo wanted. And I do love the second stanza. Was that Lennon out the door? Sounds like he's stomping across the floor and he's pouting in style and acting like a grown-up child. I love it right the way through. I think after Brian Epstein died, the Beatles, Paul tried to take the lead, but the Beatles didn't really have a direction. So I can see it. Let's say love it. It's a great poem.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much, Chris. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, Chris, you're right on. And reading the author's note at the end, yeah, it is based on that true event of the argument in the Beatles. But what I liked about it, beyond just the subject matter, is how when I was listening to it, how I take it personal and think about contractual or any time that I try to sign anything, sign my name to anything, and the weight of all of that, especially in more and more of a litigious world. I think that this story or what goes on in what happened with the Beatles, we can all kind of take to ourselves and realize that anything that we sign and the weight to it. And I like how there's that struggle and how it affects other people and all of that. So I think there's a greater message here that we can all take along with the history lesson. We can all take it personally and understand it and take the message home to ourselves. And I like that aspect of it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Jeremy. All right, Pam, you're up.
I really like this poem. First of all, on a technical level, just a spot-on recording with great background music to accompany her reading. Not too high, not too low, just really well balanced out. What I like about this poem is that anybody, I think, who's a Beatles fan will connect with it and relate to it emotionally. But I also feel like you don't need to be a Beatles fan to relate to it emotionally, because she creates the sense of sadness, the sense of, you know, of having to let go, of, you know, of breaking up any sort of group or friendship where people just, you know, fall apart. There's that real sense of falling apart that comes through in the dialogue. So just an excellent write and very well done.
All right. Thank you, everybody. A little bit. This one, My Dark Hour by Steve Miller Band. A lot of people don't know is Steve Miller was in a recording studio just hanging out, and Paul and the Beatles had a fight. Paul was pissed off, and he kind of walked in and said, this room free? Yeah. You mind if I hang out and bang out a bit? So him and Steve Miller actually, this was Steve Miller's song, but Paul did the bass, the drums, guitar, and backing vocals for this song. He was just basically, after talking with Steve about what just happened with him and the boys, because they were arguing over Alan Klein, who was going to be their business manager, who was actually a pretty crappy piece of work who enriched himself more than he did the bands he represented. And that was the fine point, what this was about, and what Paul was pissed off about, why the other three wanted, yet were actually listening to what McCartney was offering up. Anyway, McCartney pounded out his, after having a conversation with Steve Millen, he pounded out his aggression on the drums and tuned in with background vocals, bass guitar, and lead guitar for the song for Steve Miller. This was back in 1969. And that would be right around the time they were probably doing Let It Be, because Abbey Road was already in production. So a lot of crap was going on. Yeah, and that was kind of the one thing that blew up the notes. And they ended up a year later off on the back end of hell.
Cool comment there, Rex. It's always interesting to learn those little tidbits that you know.
Yeah, just God, stuff to get stuck in the brain.
Well, sometimes it's good to shake it out. All right. Are we ready to roll on to the next one?
Oh, absolutely. What we got?
Physician of the Heart by Inner Sanctum. And it goes like this. I need a new physician who can heal a broken heart, for I don't know just what to do. I'm falling all apart. The loss of love has made me ill. I need a treatment plan. Perhaps there is some magic pill to kill this bloody man who haunts my dreams and stalks my mind. It's trying to endure. I want to leave those thoughts behind. The doc may know a cure. Please tell me of a healer who will help me, will help my pain to end, and stitch a heart that's torn in two, and help my soul to mend. And poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jeremy, why don't we lead off with you?
From the very beginning, I've always been a huge Shel Silverstein fan, and that's what this felt like to me. It starts off with a problem, and then it comes to a close with some kind of off-kilter solution to that problem, and it always brings a smile to my face. I think the rhyming fits perfectly, and that's just what it reminded me of. It reminded me of a childlike poem, even though it's even a much more mature subject matter, being that you're talking about a broken heart. But I like the fact that it's handled in such a such a soothing way is the best way I can describe it. So very much enjoyed.
I like that. Thank you, Jeremy. And Chris, how about you?
What an awesome poem. I like it because I should imagine just about every single person in the world who's ever had their heart broken can allude to it, because, like you say, you don't know what to do. You are falling apart. The loss of pain has made me ill. I need a treatment plan. And like I say, you just can't see anything good in your life when you've sort of, I'm guessing the person's been dumped or obviously come out of the relationship worse than the person who they split up with. And you can just read it in the lyrics. Who haunts my dreams and stalks my mind, it's trying to endure. I want to leave those thoughts behind, but obviously you can't. You sort of can't move on in life at that one moment when you're first single or first estranged. And like you said, it's written very simple words, but it's such a strong message and it's such a clever poem. Very well done. Great write.
Great comment there, Chris. Thank you very much. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this has a wonderful rhyme and flow. And I like the reference to the boogie man, the second stanza with the reference to the treatment plan and to kill this boogie man, that whole idea of those thoughts that repetitively just haunt your mind. So excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Well, don't you guys suck. You took all my talking points. Jeez. No, you hate everything. I thought those two middle stanzas kind of set the pace. The boogeyman to finish off that number two, and then who haunts my dreams and stalks my mind to end up thought number three was kind of the nice note. Then to finish out the doc, they know a cure, and then that final stanza. So great comments, everybody. All right, Pam, what you got?
All right. Well, up next, we have Hello, Doctor by Simon Guest. And Chris, will you please give that a read for us?
I shall. I was just getting the poem up and get familiar with it quickly. Hello, Doctor. Her smile captivates. Her eyes tease. I watch her as she narrates. Her body I'd like to please. Hold her in my arms as I undress her, singing, praising psalms. Magnificent beauty, you concur. My tongue above and beyond will eagerly flicker. Of her elixir I will be fond, making her pleasure slicker. My hands caress her ample bosom, eager for her to come. My lips around her gentle blossom. There she goes, and then some. End poem.
Great read, Chris. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think here's another person who had fun with the whole playing doctor theme, just like Betty Tate did earlier. You know, so let's see. Well, this is great all the way through, but I like hold her in my arms as I undress her, singing praise and psalms, magnificent beauty you can cure. I also like the stanza after that, of her elixir I will be fond, making her pleasure slicker. You know, really just great sensual imagery, a fun write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Jeremy, how about you?
Hello, Doctor. Yeah, I think I captured it most in that last line of the first. Her body I'd like to please, which made me think that this whole poem was it was imagined. It was in his mind of something that he would like to do. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he's fantasizing about all of these things that's going to happen, you almost forget it as the poem progresses and it becomes real. So I think that the fact that it's a fantasy or a desire of someone an object of his desire, kind of makes this thing that much more intense. The fact that it's not really happening, the fact that it's something that he hopes would happen, like I just said, it makes the whole thing much more desirable and intense. So the subject matter is definitely heated, definitely sensual, and you feel it. You feel it all the way through.
Oh, great read into the fantasy angle there, Jeremy. Thank you. And Chris, you got to read it. How about you?
I'm going along the sort of Jeremy lines. I was reading it almost more as a dream, a sort of dream woman he'd like to be with. But like you say, the sort of last stanza, maybe he actually is with her. It's a lovely poem to read. It has a lovely flow and has lovely rhyme. And like you say, it does evoke lovely imagery right through your mind all the way through. So it's a fantastic poem. Very well done. And thank you for letting me read it.
Thank you. Great comments, gang. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got there?
Well, our last poem is a 3-minute and 30-second SoundCloud. Do you want to go ahead and fit it in?
Oh, yeah, because we got 6 minutes left on the board.
All right. So up next we have Child of the World by Hugh Factory. Or is that Hugh Face? I think it's Hugh Face, sorry. And I'll go ahead and push play.
Hello. It's destiny. Is there in the ink? Oh, no. Child of the world. Child of the world. Why so blue? I overhear you were born a goon. Into the slum, sickly and bruised. Like a diamond in roughing and ruins, on Wolf Street, rugged and groomed. Son of the soil, wild-looking brutes, in depth of your eyes, violet hues, like violent tides in orphan's view, in scattered debris of forgotten news. Your colors now red and indigo blue. Here I am, Lord, on call, from your love and scourge, unclad in faith and unshod, on purge of gills and gods, renowned on the world, braced, made tough of God, not of this report world. Against the age I forge, that man had sold me of parental cord and torch. Trials, errors, and the joys in a sentier with a grudge. Was I at fault, hence my cross. Like a church rat and the Bible, the child army, labor the rebel, I refuse to quit these altar of Babel. Child of the world, why so blue? Slick within lips, your tongue is too. Right at this affront, a reflected hue. Deep bar and low, a deflected muse. Wrath of war from forefathers' queue. Son of the spoil, why looking doom? A run against the sun, skipping school. Roaming Rome in cage, action skewed. Survivor of the fetus, you move to cool. Tide of the spoil, why without a clue? Here I am, Lord, on call. From your love and scourge, unclad in faith and unshod, on forge of guilt and God, renowned on the world. Braced, made top of God, nuns of this rippled world. Against the age I forge, that man had sold me of parental cord and torch. Trials, errors, and the judge in a sentier with a grudge. Was I at fault, hence my cross. Like a church rat on the Bible, the child army labeled a rebel. I refuse to quit this altar of Babel. Child of the world, son of soil, is it too late to plow the land anew?
Great read, Hughes. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated.
Wow.
And that's quite the piece. There's a lot of depth to this, the action of whether we've been too indoctrinated within the book to actually understand the book, and that which we see is spoiled unto our own selves. It's kind of a great thought, especially those last two lines. Child of the world, son of the soil. Is it too late to plow the land anew? I think not. It's not a matter of faith itself. It's maybe stepping outside of that which has been indoctrinated and looking at that voice for what it is offered, as opposed to that which is being offered to you. And Pam, what do you think?
Oh my goodness, yeah, this has some really powerful lines throughout. And there's really this whole sense of acknowledging that we are shaped by the world. And there's almost this cry for help, and this idea of, you know, wanting to help your fellow man. And a real strong sense of spirituality, but that touches upon the brutality and the ugliness of the world. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, I'm at the back. I got 30 seconds left. Great show, Pam. Jeremy, Chris, thank you for stopping in and sitting to read and comment. It's always appreciated. And we'll come back and do this again next week. We've got the delays next week. And remember, the end of the month, we are Halloween on Rhythm and Rhyme. So that's going to be a fun night. I've got something in mind. Keep everybody on their toes and actually elicit a lot of fun for Thanksgiving night. So great night, Pam. Wonderful.
Great show tonight, Rex. It was a lot
good
of
night,
fun.
All. Happy Monday to all.
Good night, Chris. Good night, Jeremy.
Thank you,
thank you for being here.
Good night, guys.
Great
thank you
show.
Very much.
Good night.